Summer travel and vacation rentals on today's Milenomics Shortcut. We're back with a shortcut on summer travel this summer. That's summer 2020, not next year. And vacation rentals. You want to take the topic and introduce it?
Yeah, I think summer rentals are both on our mind because we've been booking them recently. And I just looking around at Facebook groups and what friends and family are talking about, it's on everyone's mind. Things are opening up. Maybe we were thinking it was a year for a road trip, but I don't know. For me, I was looking for something closer. I ended up booking a vacation rental about 90 minutes away from our house, so potentially a single shot drive. Have you booked something recently? What's your target here for the next few weeks?
Yeah, I'm about 12 hours away from home.
Ooh, so is that a drive or a flight?
Nah, there's no way. There's no way I can drive it. I mean, I don't even like driving 90 minutes, Robert. So 90 minutes I can do, but 12 hours, no way. I've got two little kids, so it's not going to happen. Yeah, Lake Tahoe area, about 12 hours away, and it'll be a return trip for us. But Providence area, that new to you guys, or is that somewhere you guys have been before?
We've been there before, so we're going down to Newport, a little bit south of Providence area. But a beautiful area and a very common thing, I think, to do from the Boston area or maybe the New York area as a day trip or as an overnight. So we're going to stay there for, you know, longer than we ever have before. I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's a lot of places that are very, you know, seasonally touristy, day trippy. They get very crowded during the day and things ease off at night, or at least that's what I'm hoping, because that was my perception in staying there before. So I'm looking forward to really getting to know the area better, because Newport, Rhode Island is very beautiful, very beautiful. So we took a bunch of notes here on things to go through. Maybe we'll just hop right into them and kind of, you know, compare notes on what our perspectives on these things, our observations that we came up with that might be generally applicable to anybody who is, you know, looking. I feel very normal, I would say, in terms of I'm planning.
In general? Or
I think we tend to be very long-term planners.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm like, it's getting, you know, we've been here for about 4 months. It'd be nice if we got out and did something, like, you know, maybe short and sweet and maybe like 2 weeks from now. You know, like almost everything is booked. Yeah. Like, you know, like I was talking about cruises we booked 3 years out, right? So doing something 2 weeks out, just kind of like depending on the weather and our mood, was very novel for me. So I don't know about you, but do you usually plan vacation rentals like this, like further out than we're looking at here? Like, it's very touch and go. Like, how is COVID going to be affecting the ability to fly, the ability to take a road trip, the ability to find rentals?
To answer your question, I don't usually plan short term. You know, it's usually a long term planning situation, and it's pretty rare, even 6 weeks out for me. So this is a situation where it's definitely COVID related. Even, I mean, we'll get into it later in the show, but even 6 weeks out, I'm not really confident what it's going to look like. So I would rather book 2 weeks out or a week out. That said, let's just get into this here. I mean, the first part of discussion here would be hotels versus vacation rentals. Now, long term, I have always had a vacation rental bias, I would say. And you have, tell me if I'm wrong, Robert, you've always had a hotel bias.
You're right. You're right. No, the one case I do tend to, if I am going to do a VRBO or an Airbnb type situation, it would be for a summer vacation, beachy kind of something. Mm-hmm. But in general, I do have a preference towards hotels. Just too many sketchy experiences, or a perception of sketchy experiences, and I do prefer maybe the reliable service standards at a hotel or at least a chain that I, you know, think that I'm going to be familiar with. So you're right, I definitely do prefer hotels. But with COVID, that changed. You know, the prospect of staying at a Marriott, you know, a big-ish convention-y almost hotel in the Newport area, it didn't sound so good for this purpose of staying for 4 nights, you know, 2 adults, 2 growing boys, just getting to be too tight in a standard hotel room. We're going to be there longer, going to want to spread out. But with COVID especially, I mean, some of these pictures I'm seeing from people's experiences in hotels, they don't look like a good place to be. You know, like, hey, we got free breakfast. Well, it's a diminished experience, you know. So,
right. Yeah. The pools are all closed. The hot tub's not open. Yeah. I know what you mean.
One family at a time in the elevator, and they give you the stink eye if you don't do something right. And just too close, you know, right now, having space in a private residence is really, really premium. So, definitely, I had a preference for this. This was the absolute, we would not have gone if we were going to go to stay in the hotel. So, definitely a preference for private homes in this case. But, yeah. What about prices though? Right? Like,
I was just gonna jump there when you mentioned premium.
Yeah,
there is definitely a premium going on here. Whether it's due to supply and demand, or it's part of me, the skeptic, thinks that Airbnb and VRBO sent emails to everyone saying, "We know that it's been really tough.
Yeah.
But if you just increase your pricing, the numbers we're seeing are amazing, and you can get more than ever for your rental, because it seems like units that are, you know, normally a pretty reasonable amount are going for maybe 50% more than what I've seen in the past.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I don't watch a lot of these as maybe as closely as you do in the same locales and things like that to have that kind of sense for a data point. But I can look at a place that I go and know what I think rentals should go for. And I was like, that's a non-starter. I can't get excited about getting in the car and going there and staying in that place that's $500 a night. That is not a nice place. I know that place. It's right, not nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. The way that I usually compare is I'll say, how many hotel room equivalents is this Airbnb or this VRBO? You know, how many hotel rooms would I have to book instead of this place? And that's kind of the metric that I would use. And then I'll say, well, okay, it's got four bedrooms, so it's maybe the equivalent of two hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I would think. And then I would say, well, if I'm looking at $300 a night for a hotel room, $600 a night for a four-bedroom house, that's probably worth it in my mind because it's a little bit better value. You've got extra space. You've got common areas. You don't have anybody around you. Well, those places are going for $900, $1,200. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And the opposite's happening with hotel rooms. Those prices are depressed because they don't have anybody coming. So it makes the difference in price seem larger maybe than it is, because hotel rooms are moving down, Airbnbs are maybe holding steady or moving up slightly, but the difference seems so much bigger.
Well said. Oh, what about this cash out angle we talked about in episode 79 of the show, where you can take Chase Ultimate Rewards at 1.5 cents a piece and just have cash in hand and do exactly what you want to do? You were asking me if I psychologically was more, you know, predisposed to do an Airbnb because you could do that. Airbnbs and VRBOs historically have not been something that you can book with points. You know, we always struggle with using Chase Ultimate Rewards through the vacation rentals, that sparse selection that they
still
have there.
Still doesn't work, yeah.
Still not working.
2 years later.
But now we can just turn all of our Ultimate Rewards into cash with just a little bit of work. And yeah, maybe feel a little more cash rich and less Ultimate Reward rich, but I feel empowered to just do exactly the kind of vacation that I want to take, because that was my take on it. When I saw a path to cashing out Ultimate Rewards, I said, this isn't saying no to travel. This is saying yes to more of the kind of travel that I want to take. Did that play into your consideration at all in terms of what to book this year?
It's definitely going to allow me to cash out those Ultimate Reward points at 1.5. And it's definitely going to go against the travel that I'm going to be taking here. But I don't think it actually played into my mindset. And I did it that way on purpose, because it's very easy to start talking yourself into a more expensive property then.
Yeah.
You know, you say, well, I want to spend 200,000 Ultimate Rewards, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gets you $3,000 worth of cash out at 1.5. And then you start going, well, you know, I could really just do 3,000. And then you've effectively erased your cash out bonus.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pay myself back with it, but I took that calculation out until the very last step.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to do that because otherwise it's very easy to overspend. We'll talk about it later, but the quantity of places that are available, very limited.
Yeah.
And so you're sometimes looking at an A versus a B, and the price differential is huge.
Yeah.
And so I love the 1.5 cash out. Don't get me wrong, I really do. But I think it's important to be able to hold it in the back of your mind and not the forefront of your mind. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. It does. And it depends how many Ultimate Rewards you have and all that sort of thing, or whether you really account for, you know, your vacation, how you budget for your vacation. So that's a very personal thing. And people might play that a variety of different ways. You want to take this next point here?
I sort of touched on this next point, but it's the price fluctuation. You know, with hotel rooms, yes, there is price fluctuation. I mean, the most common is the weekend versus weekdays. And mm-hmm. It depends, really, if you're in a vacation area or a non-vacation area or a business center or a non-business center. But, you know, you have those trends. And with Airbnb and VRBO, there are price differentials, but the trends are a lot harder to find because you're dealing with, you know, multiple owners of single units. And each one is working independently, for the most part, to price their unit. But then they are working against each other as well.
Right.
So it's a very dynamic situation. And for someone that's, I would like to pick your brain, Robert, because I'm very used to it. You know, I go in there, I'm used to some of the issues with the pricing on the search engine, for example. And I'm used to some of the issues with the fees and some of the other issues that we're going to talk about later. But as someone who doesn't really use these as often, What's your experience been with the price differentials?
Yeah, so much there, right? I mean, I'm used to looking at a calendar and seeing like them, like a calendar with numbers on it. Like this is how much it is on these dates and this is how much it is right. on these dates. And I think it seemed to me that Airbnb, maybe versus VRBO as a comparison point, allowed for more flexibility in how the host is going to price the place. And so I popped in some dates and I came up with the price and I said, oh, let me shift this a little bit. I'm like, well, why did it get so much more expensive? Okay, it's weekend, like you say. Well, how come it got so much cheaper when I did that? Oh, the host is doing 20% off of four nights.
Five nights, yeah, I know what you mean.
And it bumped it up to seven nights and it goes 40% off. I'm like, oh, okay. And I understand that you've got fixed cost of cleaning and then you've got some fees that are ambiguously tacked on there. I guess what keeps Airbnb in business. But the whole thing, by the end, it got to be a lot more expensive than I thought it was going to be. But again, I was looking in my mind, I was thinking, it's this much a night if I book it for this duration. But if I go to seven nights, then it'd be this much. Look, it's much cheaper per night now. Hey, shouldn't we stay for a week? I'm like, well, how long do you really want to stay? Yeah. Is your goal to stay for the amount that you want to stay and pay a fair price for it? Or is it to stay so long that you get it for a cheap price?
That's like, a great point, yeah.
So, and then, okay, so you've latched onto a place that's your perfect place and you want to maybe stay longer, but it's booked up for those longer things. So do you take and then shift your entire vacation to be after the 4th of July because it was a better price per night if you wanted to stay? It's just, it got to be crazy. And A, there is scarce resources here and they're not very granular. It's very coarse, right? You're switching, like, we've got a place that's right in this neighborhood, or we're on the beach, or we're, 20 minutes
away.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's very, and so that leads to a lot of anxiety. I mean, when I was going to book this, I initially was going back and forth with the host, looking at just some, that's one thing that's frustrating to me for Airbnb versus looking at vacation rentals through an agency is more normally what I do. So like with an agency, they'd have, say, 20 properties that they manage. And they have very consistent listings of all those. And then once you pick one that you like, they show you the availability calendar. And they try to guide things to, in the summer especially, like Saturday to Saturday rentals or something like that. Airbnb is a little bit more of a Wild West kind of situation. Everyone's got a different idea of when the rental time starts and stops, and people can just pick off a night if they want to pay the premium to do it and all that kind of stuff. So I was just looking at some, provisional nights that would work for me on this property. And then the host locked me into those nights, said, okay, I'm giving you an invitation to book those. And I was like, well, that's just kind of, I was just poking around. I wasn't really, I asked the host, I said, you don't have any pictures of the exterior of your place. Do you have any? I mean, is it like, it looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous on the inside, but you don't have any pictures of the exterior. She says, oh, I'll post them for you. And then she extended me an invitation to book it. And I slept on it and I woke up the next morning and she emails me back and she says, oh, hey, I've got another interested party for some of those nights. Are you sure you still want those nights? I'm like, I didn't even say I wanted those nights in the first place, but I wanted these other nights. And it just devolved into this really stressful 24-hour period where back and forth, and I had it and I lost it and I got it back. And it just the very scarce resources there. And it could drop, you feel like you've really lost something, like you're buying a house practically.
I know.
Because there really might not be anything that you're similarly enthusiastic about in the whole area for the dates that you want to go.
I mean, a very similar experience. It's so funny that you bring that up and say that. Slept on it two nights, and one or two of the nights that I needed were booked out from under us.
Exactly.
And so that effectively takes the entire property off the market for you.
Exactly. They weren't booking the whole week like I was looking at. It was just one or two nights that disrupted it.
Yeah. And, and then you start going, well, should we move the dates, or should we stay for half of it and then stay somewhere else? And it just gets crazy. But I want to say that one thing that I do like or do appreciate against an agency is that once I am there, I like that I'm dealing with the person whose place it is directly.
Oh, you do.
I do, Robert. You don't?
I don't. I have a situation where I was renting that the air conditioning broke and it was 100 degrees in hot and humid. And I called the rental company and they got a guy over really quickly. And I think that might have been more challenging if I was dealing with an owner, an absentee owner. I was having a hard time getting a hold of. This place, I could literally walk from our place to the rental agency. And I said, hey, air conditioning's busted. And they said, hey, here's some money. Go to a movie. We'll have it fixed by the time you get back. So in that case, I liked it. Why do you prefer dealing directly with the owner instead of the agency?
I'm more about the experiences on the ground. And so I've gotten such great local tips from the owners that I hear what you're saying. When there is an issue, when there's a service disruption or there's some kind of problem with the property, having an owner that that is not even there maybe makes it difficult to get a response. Maybe not. You know, I've had situations where I've stayed at Airbnbs and the owners have been states away and they've handled all kinds of issues with phone calls, and they have, you know, their normal standard maintenance crew that they usually use. But, you know, on the ground, I've gotten such great tips from owners who are locals that I find that value to be maybe outsized in my mind, but, you know, they're just experiences that I've been able to have because of the owner saying, hey, you know, you said you like this. How was that? That was great, you know, and we'll try this tomorrow. Okay, why? Well, we'll try that. Thanks. Appreciate it. So almost like a curator for our trip where it sometimes helps.
I think, you know, I thought the whole point of Airbnb in the first place, to make you feel like you more are living there in somebody else's home for a temporary period of time. So I should take advantage of our host's tips coming up. She was saying, you know, restaurants are limited capacity. It'd be smart to get reservations for places ahead of time. And the mansions are open, but you need a reservation ahead of time. So I should, you know, pick her and say, hey, you know, honestly, I don't have a lot of restaurants in mind. Here's what I'm looking for. Give me some pointers.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes it's a bust. You go to the restaurant and you're like, wow, this is not what I was thinking at all. But
great taste in furnishings, but bad taste in restaurants.
Yes. What's that word? Classy, right? Yeah. Oh, don't get me started on that word.
I'm not bringing it back up.
No. We talked a little about pricing issues. And one of the big things is I think there is a minimum number of days. You said, hey, if you want to stay for one day and just bite the bullet and pay the premium, go ahead. But because there is a premium, and we should talk about those premiums, I think it is important to know that there's a minimum number of days here. You know, there's a cleaning fee usually associated with every Airbnb or VRBO rental. Then on the VRBO side, there's usually fees for listing. There's owner fees where they can add those on as well. And so some of those are fixed at a dollar amount. Like a cleaning fee of $200 a night takes a place that's $200 and doubles the price for one night.
Yeah.
And then it takes the price and increases it by 50% for two nights. So I look at 4 or 5 night minimum. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, depends on the market, of course, right? You can find a place where the hotels are really expensive and you need space for a family. So you might be able to justify in your mind a 2 or 3 night stay. But no, you're right. And as long as they're transparent about it, I'm okay with it. But a lot of times you have to go very far through the booking process to see what that is.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the time to mention, I was booking a place for April this year that got canceled in Italy, in Sorrento, Italy. And I saw the same unit listed all over the place. I mean, you name it, this thing was on it. Expedia, VRBO, Booking.com, Agoda, everything. This same place with a very unique name I could find listed all over the place. And I saw the prices fluctuating wildly depending on how many people I was going to declare that I was going to have in the unit. And I didn't even really know whether we were going to have 5 people or 7 people or what, because maybe, you know, we'd invite a couple other people to come along. But it took me a while to put my finger on that Airbnb that was, that, you know, that's why my perception is that Airbnb owners can dial it in more. And maybe VRBO is more fixed price. Yeah, like you can't change how much you're charging depending on how much it is per person. Because it went from like $300 a night for 2 people up to $600 a night for 5 people. I was like, what is going on here? And VRBO was consistent at $400, so I booked through VRBO in that case. So I don't think that there's a consistent winner. You just have to try to price it out on a number of different platforms. But when I start doing that and wandering around, I mean, I feel like a real internet sleuth. You know, like
you're like, wait a minute, is that the same kitchen? It looks like the same kitchen. Oh no, that's
exactly
not
exactly. I mean, I was looking from the inside to the outside. Oh, it looks like it's on that street. I think I see a street. Let's zoom in on that. I've pegged this place.
There's a tree that you can sort of see through the curtain there. Let's go to street view. I know exactly what you mean, but it is important to do that search. You know, I've seen crazy price differences, and there's no firm rule. You're saying Airbnb was more expensive for your party of 5. I've seen the opposite, where Airbnb is less expensive than VRBO because VRBO tax on owner fees and listing fees, and for whatever reason the person that listed it on Airbnb just has the cleaning fee and that's it.
Yeah.
And doesn't have a per person fee or anything like that. So it's really important to try to find the place in at least one other booking channel. But it is frustrating. They don't give you the address. They give you the general location and then some pictures, and you have to try to figure out. It is a little frustrating, too, to not know exactly where you're going to stay until you book.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I ran that in this case, absolutely. No, some places they do show a very precise place on the map that is just kind of generalization. And it could be, in some locations, that's very important, making a three-street mistake. A
couple streets. Yeah, exactly. A couple streets make a difference.
Oceanfront or not, I mean, that's kind of a big deal, right?
You know, in the beginning of the show, you mentioned that it's a little difficult to get a discount on this and that we're used to using points, we're used to all kinds of different things. What can we do beside the 1.5 cent cash out of Chase Ultimate Rewards? Is there anything else that you had success doing on your booking?
Well, on that VRBO one, I did. You know, actually, I think I got VRBO cash back through some portal for that stay that got canceled in April. I didn't see it get clawed back.
I know what you mean.
So yeah. That worked, and I went to do that again. But with Airbnb, I didn't see any portals. And so the other one that came to mind was Bank of America has some offers sometimes, but they're pretty capped and they're not around right now. So it's pretty challenging. Do you have any ideas? You're going to make me cry now with all the money you left on the table by not booking it through a portal?
No, I haven't seen a B of A offer or a Chase offer for Airbnb in quite some time. But when they do have those offers, you know, this show's going to be on the internet forever. So when COVID is gone, when everyone's back to normal and Airbnb is still partnering with Bank of America and Chase, it's important to use, if you can, use the function that Airbnb offers where they split your payment up. Have you seen that?
No. So you can if you have like four B of A cards and one Chase card that all have this offer, you can really split it up that many times or what?
Sometimes they'll let you split it with other parties that are going with you. The idea behind that is you're going on a trip with some friends and you don't want to handle all the money. You want, you know, everybody wants to charge their own credit card. So you send emails to the three other people that are coming and they each pay. That's one way. The other way is to just literally split it. And so they'll say, all right, you're going to pay $2,000 for this place. You have to pay the first $1,000 right now. Mm. And then 2 weeks before you guys go, the other $1,000 is due. And the reason I like to do that is that sometimes that B of A offer comes back around and you can actually double dip on it. Because the cap is, like you said, it's very low. It's maybe $700 or $500 in 5% cash back. But when you can pay for half the trip, then wait 3, 4, 6, 8 months and then pay for the other half of the trip, you can oftentimes get it twice. And so you effectively double the amount that you're able to get that 5% back on. Beyond that, there are some portals for Airbnb. There's 3 British Airways Avios per dollar if you go through the British Airways portal. Sorry.
Why didn't I see that? If I go to Cashback Monitor, my go-to place does not list anything other than some crazy lemony thing. So that needs turbo cashback. So
okay. three Avios per dollar. Delta also does a SkyMile per dollar. And I've had trouble with those tracking. You know, Delta will come back and eventually award the miles. I think I had an Airbnb stay that I booked through the British Airways portal and it just devolved. And it wasn't worth it for me. You know, it was like, I'm dealing with all this for $30 worth of Avios. Forget it. So
it is a big monetary transaction in a lot of cases, but it is a small percentage that we're talking about. A thing a lot of people talk about that maybe mentioned is it should track as travel, right? If you do like a Chase Sapphire Reserve or something like that, and that card is famous for not offering 3X. I had to fight when I did my VRBO booking. They eventually did give me 3X, but then sometimes they don't give you 3X, and so you have to, you know, argue with them. But it's a small percentage of a big thing, so it depends on your patience for chasing that for those pennies.
I agree with you there. It's pennies for sure, but pennies add up, I guess. And so we'll include the link to both of those portals here in the show notes. And, you know, hey, Robert, maybe you'll get a second shot at it. We're going to talk here about cancellation terms, because I think this is one of the most important parts of the COVID situation right now, and vacation rentals. Did you check the vacation rental cancellation terms before you booked?
I booked this one so close in that I'm paying for it whether I go or not. So it was, but no, I thought about that for sure. For our Italy rental that I did not go to. I mean, I booked it like 10 months out and I was able to cancel it, you know, when COVID started being an issue and it was obvious that we couldn't go there. I was able to cancel no issue. I mean, it was like 2 weeks out or something like that. So it's very favorable. If I'm going to book that again, especially with all the uncertainty we have in the future, I'm going to look very hard to find something that has very favorable cancellation terms. What are you seeing in your rentals?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important to mention that Airbnb had a very flexible cancellation window for COVID-related things. For COVID-related cancellations, it was, you could cancel. COVID is happening. And then they said, hey, look, new bookings, this is a known situation. We're not going to cover you with our, it's called an extenuating circumstance clause. And I've had great luck with their extenuating circumstance clause when there's a tornado or a hurricane or bad weather or some kind of natural disaster, the Airbnb will step in and allow you to cancel with a full refund, regardless of the terms that you booked into. You know, the host gets to set their cancellation terms, and Airbnb has these flexible terms, these not so flexible terms. And it's, I think you mentioned, Robert, it's a large amount of money you're going to outlay, and you won't have protection if air travel shuts down, or let's say the place that you're going enacts a local ordinance that says there's no outdoor anything. Yeah. Then you go, well, what's the point of me even going on this trip? And what's the point of me going on the trip is not a valid excuse to use travel insurance even. So, you know.
You don't get it. It's closed. Yeah. It's going to be no fun, man.
Right. But, you know, a host is going to be very, I believe, black and white about it and say, the space is yours. You are available. It's available for you to come. However you need to get here, that's your responsibility. And there is no refund. And I think that's the idea you need to go into when you have a very inflexible cancellation policy. You have to keep in mind that is the possibility. You could be out this money without a claim on your travel insurance, without a claim with Airbnb, and you have to decide. You know, we talk all the time personally, Robert, do we want to take trips? It's not the can we take trips, it's do we actually want to take the trip right mm-hmm. now? And if your answer is you don't want to take the trip, you need to look for something that's flexible. Something with a window that gives you a full refund with 2 weeks out. You know, hosts are dynamically pricing, and I think they're including that in their prices. They're trying to undercut each other. They're trying to get the bookings before, you know, it's too late, because once that week is gone, then no one can stay there at all, and they've lost out on that revenue. And I don't know if we should talk more about vacation rental revenue and things like that, but I found that, you know, I was able to go up in price a little bit, but have a very flexible cancellation policy, which gives me 2 weeks before the trip to say, I don't want to go anymore, or, hey, look, some of these options actually opened up that weren't available earlier. Yeah. And or maybe some new availability came on the market, and I can look at that and say, well, I've got a place that I know is good enough, but I can actually reassess and self-insure, and it maybe cost me $125 you know, over 5 nights, which I think is worth it. And I look at it as travel insurance.
Yeah.
I really do. When I do that, I go, well, that's $125 travel insurance right there. So
yeah. No, I think if you are doing something, you know, 6 months out, 12 months out, A, you're going to have better availability of a selection of properties. And B, you know, if I have a couple week window, I'm going to know by then whether I can safely travel to another country. And if I can't, I'll cancel right. it, and it won't be any big deal. But the prospect of something, you know, 6 months out in this climate right now, it's just impossible. I don't know if any cancellation term goes out that far, but you know what I mean? Some are quite right. a bit further out than others. And anything that's reasonable, like that 2 weeks, is, I think, a really a nice compromise to come to between a host and somebody who might be staying there. Because that gives you enough time to really, I think, know if it's going to be safe to travel.
Yeah. Yeah, and using that feature that I talked about where you split the payment up, that actually helps too. Because if you want to speculatively book something for 6 months out, it is frustrating when you have a $4,000 or $5,000 bill and you spend it now and there's nothing to show for it for 6 months. You know, I mean, we like instant gratification as much as anyone. And so you spend the money and then you go, man, I spent all that money and that trip's like a half a year away or a year away. So you can cut that up, spend half of it. And, you know, if you don't end up taking it, you only have to chase that refund down for the other half. I say chase down, but it's automated.
Yeah.
When you cancel within the cancellation window, the refund comes back automatically.
Well, the way you phrase that there, it makes me want to raise this question, this mental block about laying out cash versus the funny money points and miles that we lay out for hotels and things like that. I've seen this tendency in a lot of people, and it came in the terms of the Chase cash out puzzler. Like, oh, I don't want to give up my travel money, or you know,
right,
you said like,
right.
I don't want to lay out $5,000 or $6,000, you know, 6 months ahead of time. That's painful. You know, that's
yeah.
oh, it's, and so what do you think? You do a lot of Airbnb type rentals, and you're sounds like pretty negative on hotel points as you know, maybe as opposed to airline miles, the leverage for those and, you know, family and all that. How do you open up the crowbar and let the credit card swipe and allow yourself to enjoy the vacation that you want to take with cold, hard cash instead of points?
I think keeping in mind that all your points are eventually cash at some amount, at some conversion rate. All your points can be converted to cash. I think that's the key. You know, we one of the things we talk about all the time is membership rewards to an airline for a business class ticket. And you'll never hear on this blog that that's a free business class ticket. Let's take the best opportunity to book a business class ticket. Actually, we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, ANA 88,000 round trip. That is 88,000 membership rewards transferred over to ANA. That is not free. Now, if you value a membership reward at a penny or a penny and a half, you're looking at somewhere between $880 for round trip airfare and business class, or about $1,300 for round trip business class airfare. So when you have that in mind, everything is cash. It allows you to approach everything, I guess, skeptically, or maybe with the same approach, because if you're not approaching it the same way, you're approaching with points and miles in this aggressive manner that, you know, I don't care about laying it out 12 months ahead of time. Doesn't really matter because it's all free. But then it comes time to actually book a place with Airbnb and you go, oh, whoa, putting that money out, that's too much. I think you're playing a different game with different currencies. And when you level the playing field like that, that makes it easy for me because the calculation is done. Is it worth it for me to spend this much equivalent cash in points? Is it worth it for me to spend this much cash? And so that's my approach to it. I don't know if that's, you know, something that would work for you. What do you do, Robert?
Yeah, you know, I you see people ask questions like, what's the best use of Hilton points? Or I've got all these Avios, what do I do with them? And I think, you know, we talk a lot on the Paid Show about figuring out what you want, finding the best way to pay for it, earning currencies that enable that. And that way you don't get into that question even, right? Because you're approaching it from, this is what I want, this is how I'm going to pay for it. How do we make that happen? So yeah, no, that's, we've been beating the drum on the Paid Show about that for a long time. So I think it's a good time to restate it here. And I think that Chase 1.5 cents a piece cash out illustrates this more clearly than anything in the history of points and miles. So if you can't see that the points and miles that you're using for travel are not free, then that one illustrates it incredibly well for you and you're leaving money on the table. I went and did some grocery shopping and went on to Home Depot this week and actually used that cash out for a legitimate purpose. It was like, you know, okay, there's $220 worth of groceries and it's however many ultimate rewards, but it was not cash that was going out of my wallet. And right now I like that. So take a look at that cash out if it isn't something that's on your radar screen right now. And you might not have a Chase Sapphire Reserve. It might be worth upgrading to it. Talk a lot about that one in episode 79.
Yeah, I actually upgraded just for this. So the last thing I want to go over here, Robert, is have you put any thought into buying a vacation home?
A little bit over time. You know, I didn't even realize before we started talking here, I did that once in a while, many, many years ago. And we lived in Boston. Real estate was really expensive. We bought a place out in Arizona and we treated it like a vacation home for a couple of years. And the reason we did it was because it didn't put a dent in our ability to afford real estate in our primary location. And so, yeah, we did it. It was so cheap. We made a good profit on it over a couple of years. The real estate market happened to be hot. But I think the more common thing is to find something a couple hours away from where you currently are. And that is a really hard thing to wrap our heads around when we talk about points and miles versus that. I think we think about it as a one way or the
this
other.
Or
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we had a great discussion with that in episode 82 with a subscriber, and he described how COVID drove him to do that. I mean, what did it inspire you in any way to look at real estate within a couple, 3 hours from your locale there? Or if you're in New York City and you haven't been able to get out and just roam around freely for three or 4 months, that could really make you stir crazy. And he had some pretty compelling arguments about how cheap real estate is 2 hours from New York City in certain areas versus, you know, again, not putting a dent in his ability to, you know, get a better, bigger place in New York City or something like that.
You know, I have the issue of repeating of a trip repeating itself over and over and over. And I like where I live, but it's not a vacation. It's where I live. And I really want a change of scenery. And I could go to San Diego. I love San Diego. I could take a vacation to San Diego any day. There's no way I'm affording a vacation home in San Diego. It's just not happening. I love San Francisco. I can't even afford a main home in San Francisco. Yeah. So I'm stuck in between maybe some places that I guess I would say my geography is not compatible with the idea of a couple hour drive to a vacation home. So
yeah, you can really change the it's very diverse here up in a 2 hour drive. You can be up in Maine, in the Berkshires, out at the Cape, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, just all kinds of places in a short amount of time. And that is really cool because those places seem and feel very different. And you can find some good values depending on what you're looking for. But one of my favorite things to say when we're on vacation is, especially, you know, my beloved Four Seasons Aviar in San Diego, I said, this is like our vacation home that we pay for only when we use it. Because you own a place, you know, the cable bill starts to become an issue. The three things that needed to be repaired and we're there for a week and we need to get somebody over to fix that while we're here, or you're doing it yourself while you're on vacation, all that stuff starts to add up. And either you're a handyman, I am not, or you're hiring people out to do that stuff and it starts to become a nuisance. Like, it seems good. Like, maybe having a second car, a sports car, seemed like it'd be appealing. And then that's appealing until you're making repairs on that. And then you're having to get it inspected. And then you're insuring it. And it needs new tires. And how often do I drive this thing? And why don't I just rent that when I need it? That's the trade-off in my head. Who knows? We'll take a look at the... I'm sure I'll be looking at some real estate windows this weekend when we're down in Newport. And probably won't buy anything. But it's always worth... Hey, you tell me if there's a deal out there. I'll tell you if I'm interested in it and able to make it work out. Because it does sound like a lot of fun. But yeah, I think I'm still more wired to go on different vacations all the time. And I do like the variety that involves. So... Someday, maybe.
I like that sports car analogy. You can rent a way better sports car than you can buy most of the time. So, yeah, I like the window shop too, you know, but then it also reinforces the idea that, well, I have to be a vacationer here. I just can't live here. And maybe that's, maybe I need to find better vacation destinations, Robert.
I think you're doing all right.
That's right, right?
Let's wrap it up. Thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth discussion about points and miles, visit us at patreon.com/milonomics. There you'll get a special link to listen to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about topics like these.
As always, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Milonomics and Robert's at Robert Dwyer. We'd love to hear from you. Until then, we'll see you on the site.